Hi, my name is Mike Chambers. I'm a senior product manager for developer relations at Adobe, and this is my podcast. I'd actually done a podcast, Christian Cantrell and I had done a podcast about a year ago. We'd done three or four podcasts before they kind of went into the ether. They're actually pretty successful. We had a lot of fun doing them, but because we were doing them together and coordinating them and trying to do them really high quality audio, they actually took a lot of time to prepare. And as we got busier and busier, they just kind of fell off our agenda. So I'm putting together my own podcast now. It probably won't be as polished. You'll probably get a lot more ums and ahs and pauses in the audio. But my goal is just to chat with everyone, kind of get information out, talk about what I've been working on, what we've been doing at Adobe. So what is my role at Adobe? I'm actually in charge of developer relations for Apollo. So I've worked with originally with Macromedia and now Adobe for about 5.5 years, and I've always been really active with Flash, originally Generator, Macromedia Generator, if anyone remembers that. That's actually why I was hired at Macromedia. But then working with Flash authoring, doing primarily development and working in roles as community managers early on, and then developer relations, transitioning into developer relations for the platform over the past year. I recently moved over to the Apollo team, and I'm heading up developer relations for that project. I'm not going to go into too much information about Apollo. Basically, Apollo is code name for a project that we're working on that aims to create a cross-platform runtime that will allow you to develop desktop applications using traditional web development technologies such as Flash and Flex, HTML, JavaScript, CSS, and PDF, things like that. We're early in the process for it, so I'm not going to talk about it too much. We'll be talking about a lot more in the future. So my main focus on the Apollo team is to basically be a bridge between developers and the engineers, the product team. Make sure that developers understand what we're doing, and so and then also make sure that the engineering team understands what developer wants, what developers want, the type of APIs and features they want, and then make those personal connections when that makes sense. So again, my podcast isn't going to be as structured as the podcast that Christian and I did. I'm probably just going to focus on talking about things I've been working on over the past weeks, things that are going on within the Flash community and the wider web development community that I find interesting. So the first thing I want to talk about actually are some ActionScript 3 libraries that myself, Christian Cantrell, and Danny Dura have put together over the past couple of months, and actually released them on Labs. We built seven libraries right now, and those include a core lib library. This is a library with a lot of utility APIs, so string utils, array utils. There's a JSON serialization API that's actually created by Darren Shaw. A lot of hash algorithms, things like that. Basically, just a lot of utility type classes. We also have a Flex unit unit testing API, and this is created by Stephen Webster, Alistair McLeod, and then Danny Dura helped port it to AS3. This is actually super useful. We use it. It's an ActionScript 3 unit testing framework, and it includes a Flex component for creating for generating your to run your test. And we actually use this in all of our projects. So all of the libraries on here actually have unit tests on them. So when we make changes, we can, we know if we broke anything. And this was actually my first exposure to unit testing, and I've just been blown away by it because, we'll make some pretty complex changes. And before we weren't, things would seem to work, but you're never 100% sure. And now we can just run the unit test and either find the issues or we know things work. The other thing is nice is that when we find bugs, someone will report a bug to us, then we can create a unit test case that reproduces that bug, the test will fail, and then it's really easy to send to the developer to get them to fix that. And this actually, we ran into this issue with the JSON library where something wasn't being deserialized correctly in one case. So I just let Darren know about it. He put together the test case that made it fail, and then it was really easy for him to locate it and fix the issue. Darren actually has a post on that, and I'll link to it from the webpage when I post the podcast. The other libraries are pretty straightforward. We have a Flickr library for interacting with images from Flickr, a Mapper API. Mapper is a kind of a mashup between Flickr and geocoding data, so it allows you to work with that API. We have an Odeo API, and Odeo is an online podcasting service. So this API allows you to search their podcast and retrieve them to play them back within Flash. We have a YouTube API. This is actually pretty cool. It allows you to search for video from YouTube, which is an online video service. And the cool thing about that is YouTube actually publishes all their video as a FLV, so you can load them directly into your Flash content. They also have a cross-domain file, which means you can interact directly with it. And then finally, we have RSS and Atom libraries. I think these may be the most useful ones in there. These are actually put together by Christian Cantrell, and they cover all versions of RSS and Atom. So if you need to parse these, you can use these libraries. It makes it really simple. But the real value in them is that it provides generic parsers. So you don't necessarily need to know the format of the data you're parsing. You just need to know it's some format of RSS or Atom, and it'll figure that out and then return data to you. So you can switch between feeds or whatever, but still use the same interface. And that's the real core value of these libraries. In fact, one of the new features of ActionScript 3 is E4X support. This is a ECMA standard way to work with and manipulate XML. It's super, super powerful. And it's so awesome. It's kind of the way you expected XML to always work, but it took this long for someone to figure out how to make it work like this. Anyways, it's so easy to use that it's actually pretty simple to parse XML. And so while we were writing the APIs, while Christian was writing it, we'd have a lot of discussions like, do we really need to do this because E4X makes it so easy? But we decided it does make sense because, one, working with namespaces in E4X can be a little tricky, but also just being able to abstract away the differences in different versions of RSS is really powerful, and that's what these libraries provide. All these libraries are actually on labs. So if you go to labs.macromedia.com, there you'll find them on there. The other thing that we do, we actually moved our repository for developer relations. And this was our internal Subversion repository that we use to store all of our code. We actually moved this into a public Subversion repository that you can access via labs. So if you go to labs and do a search for source, you'll find a page, and it'll tell you actually how to check out all of our source code. It'll also tell you, there's a web-based repository browser that you can actually browse through our source code. So if you go to the libraries page, you can actually download zip files. And what these zip files contains, they contain API docs, they contain the source, and they contain the test cases and a SWCC file. SWCC's kind of like a ActionScript DLL, you can think about that you can link into your projects. And those zip files, what's in those zip files will work with whatever the current build of FlexBuilder and MXMLC is. But if you want to take a peek at what we're working on, or maybe look at some of the changes that are coming in the next build, you can actually look in our repository, and because that code we may be updating that to work with the new build or to add new APIs. And so you can kind of get a peek about what we're working on. And also, if we're trying to port it to the next player before it's public, or the next beta before it's public, you can see maybe some of the language changes or stuff. The caveat is, though, is that if you pull the source directly, that may not compile in the current public FlexBuilder build or MXMLC build. And if you look in there right now, you actually see we're working on, or I'm working on a new API for Delicious. And all the code's actually stubbed out, the docs are written, and basically I just need to implement everything. The one tricky part about that is that Delicious doesn't have a crossdomain.xml file. And for those of you who may not be familiar, crossdomain.xml file basically gives the Flash player permission to load data across domains. So the servers can give permission to the Flash player. It's a really powerful concept. Delicious doesn't have such a file. So in order to use this, you either have to go through a proxy on your server, or eventually use something like Apollo to load the data. So one of the difficulties I'm having with the Delicious API is trying to figure out the best way to allow a user to specify the proxy they have to go through, and keeping it the API simple to do that. So I think I have my head around it, but this is all open source, so I'll put it out there. People tell me if I do something wrong, and then I'll fix it. Again, the libraries on labs, this is something we're really excited about. It basically makes it really, really simple to use all these online APIs. It's really interesting because basically we're kind of abstracting away these APIs that aren't in the player, but are on some other server, way on the internet. But through these APIs, you can actually interact with them as if they were just regular player APIs. And I think it's a really powerful concept. It makes it really easy to mix and mash the APIs up. So you can focus on, building your application and not how, the details of interacting with these external APIs. In fact, we actually built an application that uses a lot of these APIs. We call it Flow. We showed this at, Kevin Lynch showed it at Flash Forward in Seattle, and I showed it during my keynote at WebDU in Australia. And I actually posted some screenshots of it a couple of weeks ago, and I'll link to that in the post for this. Basically the application allows the idea is you start with a word, and then you can search different online things such as Delicious or Dig or Flickr, YouTube, Odeo. Maybe I search for Flash. I pull up all the results from Dig that where, they were talking about Flash. And then from the Dig one, I can then start a new search from any of the terms within the Dig results. So maybe they talk about cool, and so I do a search for that on Delicious, and maybe from there it talks about, design, and I can go look what Flickr's on there, and I can view the images inline, view videos, audio, podcasts, stuff like that. This is an application that we worked on. The thing that was really cool about this application, and I'll talk about more of about this when we release it in the future, but this is the first application where we had worked with the XD team and worked with the designer. So we, got together with them and told them, what the app does, and then they worked with us to, come up with the interactions and actually gave us specs for how the app should look. And so then using the styling within Flex and transitions and states, we were able to really style this application where it doesn't actually look what you'd expect a Flex application to look like. Matter of fact, I think one of the best compliments we got was Sho Kumamoto, who's in charge of the Flex Builder team, engineering for the Flex Builder team. When he saw it, he actually said to me, "Ask me if we did this in Flex or Flash authoring." So I took that as a real compliment that we were able to stylize it. This is actually one of the cool things about the Flex 2 framework, is that the support for CSS for styling via CSS is really strong, but also built-in support for transitions and effects and moving between states is incredibly powerful. So it was really easy for us to add some complex transitions and modularize those in a way where a container knows how to interact and how to move itself just by the changes in its environment. Anyways, we are planning to release this code for beta 2. We had hacked together some stuff because of some bugs in beta 1. And now with beta 2, we're trying to refactor it because those bugs were fixed. Ran into some other issues, which have now been fixed. So when the next public beta is out, this is when we plan to release it. We'll also release all the source code and everything so people can play around with it. So the last thing I want to talk about today is actually related to the ActionScript APIs. One of the APIs contained within the core lib library is a JSON API, and that'll allow you to serialize and deserialize JSON serialized data. If you're not familiar with it, JSON is basically a way to serialize data types by using JavaScript notation. So use brackets and curly braces to denote an object, and double quotes to do a string, things like that. But one of the advantages of it is that, well, there are actually a couple advantages to it. Probably the biggest advantage to it is that every browser supports deserializing this natively via eval. So you can have a JSON packet, just run eval in a browser, and since JSON is essentially object script, JavaScript notation, it'll actually the browser will deserialize that data for you. So it's actually been around for a while. It's really taken off with the growth of AJAX, because there's a need to send data back and forth in an easy way. The other advantage to it is that it's relatively lightweight, especially if you compare it to something such as XML, which is a very verbose way to structure data. JavaScript or JSON notation is fairly compact. This is supported natively in the browser. There are a lot of server-side APIs that serialize and deserialize it. I've personally used the PHP library. But the JSON library in ActionScript will allow you to basically look to serialize and deserialize JSON. And so you can essentially use JSON as a data source. It's really powerful. I actually put up a tutorial this week that shows how to use that in a simple Flex example. It's loading some JSON off of my website that contains my latest delicious links and digs and ta-da list public items. And it's just a simple JSON feed that contains an array of objects. And you can load that. And the tutorial shows how to load that and parse it and then display it in a data grid. I actually also uploaded a screencast that shows how to do this. One thing about the tutorial, so the actual JSON part of it is literally one line of code. You just call JSON.deserialize and pass the JSON to it, and you get back, ActionScript type. So that's actually really simple. The tutorial is actually pretty long because I just assumed, the reader didn't know anything about Flex Builder or Flex 2 or JavaScript and walk through the entire process. If you already know about that stuff, then you can just like look at the code really quickly and see how easy it is to deserialize JSON using the APIs. The JSON API was actually created by Darren Shaw for us. So I think it's one of the cooler APIs in core lib, and increasingly seeing JSON being used as a data source. Yahoo recently did an option where their online REST-based APIs are actually you have an option to return JSON as a data source. And again, there's a couple advantages to it. It has native support for deserializing the browser, but it's also a relatively compact data framework. So you can kind of think about it as similar to flash remoting, which as far as like transferring data types back and forth between the server. So one of my goals for this podcast was not to drone on for too long. So we're right around the 19-minute mark now. So I'm going to wrap this one up. I'll do these, try to keep them up, do them periodically, and basically just do them whenever I get a chance. So it's Wednesday right now. I normally work at home on Wednesdays. And so I have some, I can set aside some time in the morning to record them. So I'll try to do them every Wednesday. But basically, just whenever I have time or something to talk about or want to elaborate on, I'll do one. Sometimes it may be really short, sometimes it may be longer. One thing I'm really interested in doing is interviewing and talking to other people within Adobe about the projects they're working on and, you know, their thoughts and views on everything we're doing. This is something Christian and I did with our podcast. It's actually really successful. I really enjoyed it. So if you have any comments or suggestions about, you know, who you'd like to, for me to talk to interview, what, you know, questions to ask, things like that, just post them in the comments for the weblog. So one final note, this weblog, or sorry, this podcast is released under a Creative Commons license, and specifically it's released under the Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial Share Alike 2.5 license. I'll link this on the weblog so if you want to find more information about it. So until the next podcast, thanks for listening.